We are going live now on Facebook.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hope you had a great weekend. Today is Monday, February the 22nd, 2021, and welcome to the council meeting for Fairburn City Council. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
The Honorable Mayor Elizabeth Carr-Hurst.
Present.
The Honorable Mayor Pro Tem Alex Heath.
Present.
The Honorable Linda J. Davis.
Present.
The Honorable Hattie Portis Jones.
Present.
The Honorable Pat Palin.
Present.
The Honorable Ulysses J. Smallwood. The Honorable Ulysses J. Smallwood. The Honorable James Whitmore.
Present.
Attorney Randy Turner.
I'm here. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, the attendance of council constitutes a quorum. Please allow the meeting to continue.
Thank you so much. If the Honorable Ulysses Smallwood comes on, please let me know.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Our invocation tonight is by none other than our Mayor Pro Tem, Alex Heath.
Okay, if everyone will, please bow your head. Father, we ask that you continue to bless the city of Fairburn, its citizens, mayor, and council. Father, watch over our finances that we may continue to do those things that are pleasing to our citizens. Father, we ask for the healing of our nation, states, and cities from all unjustness and the healings from the COVID-19 epidemic. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Council members, you all received the minutes. You have two sets of minutes. One is February the 8th, which is our regular council meeting, and the other one is February the 8th, which was the executive session. Does council have any corrections or additions to the minutes of February the 8th, which is the regular scheduled meeting?
Mayor, there were corrections that were sent by way of email from Attorney Turner for both sets of minutes. And I've noted those corrections.
Okay, I did not get those corrections. I have not received any corrections for either set of minutes from Attorney Turner.
Yeah, I did send corrected minutes for the executive session, which the city clerk then distributed this afternoon. I did not make any corrections to the regularly scheduled minutes.
Yeah, I think you did.
Okay, could Councilwoman Davis, could you look and check, because I'm not familiar with any corrections to the February 8th regular meeting.
Okay, let me see if I still, okay. I will pull them up right quickly.
While she's looking for that, Mayor.
For the executive, okay.
While she's looking for that, Mayor, the Honorable Ulysses Smallwood, he's not showing as being muted, but he did text me and said that he is on the call.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, Mayor, for the executive session, there were, let's see, paragraph.
Okay, we can't, Councilwoman Davis, we can't discuss the executive session. So if there are corrections to those minutes, let me get to the executive session. Let's deal with the regular scheduled meeting first.
Okay.
Because we can't really discuss the executive session minutes, okay? We
can I was just going to list the paragraph numbers, but
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's all I was going to do. Oh, but okay. You're on the regular minutes right now, right?
Yes, ma'am. Are there any corrections to the regular minutes of February the 8th?
Yes. Attorney Turner corrected, I think, comments for Councilman Whitmore. He inserted the second sentence after Mrs. North. He inserted the words, who was a member on the Housing Authority. He inserted those words after Mrs. North, the second sentence. Okay.
Actually, that was a correction that I made and not Attorney Turner.
Okay. It came with his email. Okay.
That was my correction.
Councilwoman Davis. I'm surprised you did that.
Okay.
Well, then you know your second correction in your comments.
Yes.
Okay. It's just lights install. Wasn't lights and something else.
That's correct. It wasn't lights and signs. It was just lights.
Right, just lights. Okay. Those were the corrections.
Is Madam Clerk still on the line so she can note those corrections? Are there any more corrections to the minutes of February the 8th? Madam Clerk, have you noted those corrections?
Yes, ma'am. And I sent them out to Mayor and Council this afternoon. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. So is there a motion on the floor to approve the minutes of February the 8th with the correction that has been so stated?
So moved, Councilwoman Davis.
Motion second. Made by Councilwoman Davis. Was that seconded by Councilman Whitmore?
Yes, ma'am.
Seconded by Councilman Whitmore. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposing? Minutes stand approved with corrections. I see Councilman Smallwood is on the line.
Yes, I was saying present about three or four times. I don't know what happened, but Dr. Parks just told me to sign out and sign back on, so I tried that.
Okay. Well, good to hear your voice tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, the next minutes that we need to approve are the executive session minutes of February the 8th. So are you just going to give us the paragraph numbers, Councilwoman Davis?
I can, if that's what we need. It will be paragraph 6 and paragraph 7. Had changes.
Okay. Attorney Turner.
Yes, ma'am.
So how do you suggest that, do you suggest that she send those changes in to council and yourself, because these are executive session minutes?
I received an email. I thought the city clerk sent those to everyone this afternoon. So,
She did.
Okay, so I think a motion to approve the minutes in the revised document that was sent by the city clerk this afternoon would be sufficient.
Okay. Well, I'm not in possession of any revised minutes that was sent by the clerk this afternoon. So,
Mayor, we could also just hold this until next meeting when everyone has seen them.
Okay. Let's do that. May I have a motion on the floor to hold these minutes until the meeting of, I think it's March 8th, so that we can all be duly informed of the corrections?
I will, Mayor. This is Mayor Pro Tem Heath. I make a motion that we table it, the information until the March 8th meeting.
Okay, is there a second?
Second, Councilman Smallwood.
Seconded by Councilman Smallwood. All those in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposing? That motion carries 6-0 that the minutes, the executive session minutes of February 8th be tabled until the next meeting, which is March 8th, 2021. Okay, Madam Clerk?
Ma'am?
The next item on the agenda.
The next item on the agenda is a presentation from Ms. Michelle Alexander, the Director of Strategic Planning at the Collaborative Firm, for the LTI Downtown Master Plan Update. Ms. Michelle Alexander.
Thank you. This evening, we are here just to conduct a briefing for those of you who are unable to attend the first community meeting of the LCI. I'm going to, I was going to share my screen, so I apologize. I didn't realize your folks were going to go ahead and have it up for me. So the next slide, if you don't mind. Just to walk you through that, we want to make sure you, all of you on council, know who we are, who is the team that is working on the master plan with your staff and the community, tell you a little bit about the project and the schedule, and remind everybody what the original study contained and all of the work you've done to date, all your accomplishments, which we wanted to really highlight and show off at the community meeting, and we did so. We'll give you a little bit of the context, some of the information that we're putting together as an assessment, and we'll talk about the next steps for the project. So for the next slide, if you don't mind. This is sort of our organizational chart, if you will. I'm going to start where the T is, where the community and stakeholders, and you have a core committee that you all appointed to help guide and inform the project, as well as the Atlanta Regional Commission. They're active on the project as the funding agency for it, but also as a major resource for what the project's supposed to deliver. So that's really the body and the heart and soul of all of the desires and preferences and the vision that the city will be putting together. But we do like to remind everyone that at the end of the day, it's this body, you all, the city council, that will either adopt it or make changes to it or enhance it as you see fit. And we will be doing a very robust outreach with the community, and we'll get a lot of different voices. We just always want to make sure people are aware that we're taking all this information in, we're going to share it, give the best recommendations we can with staff, but at the end of the day, it's up to City Council what you want to adopt for the plan. We're so pleased to be working with Ms. Peaks, your project manager for this project. She is what I call a planner's planner. She has all that enthusiasm about what's possible and what the vision is, and she's very pragmatic and gets it done, gets things done step by step. I am Michelle Alexander, the team lead from the collaborative firm. We have Katrina Highsmith, who is our lead in the public involvement and outreach and facilitation. And then we also have Rachel Staley on our team. She is an analyst and a transportation planner. We have on our team folks from the firm Kimley Horn. They are subcontractors with us, and they are providing the market and the housing strategy work, as well as the urban design aspect of the project. They'll work with me on that in crafting what we hear from the community and from you all to put together recommendations. And then we also have Metro Analytics, and those folks are transportation experts and on a wide range of transportation, but especially how investment in infrastructure, smart investment in the right place, can really spark interest from the private sector. And we work really closely with this firm because of the way they think of how real estate responds and the market will respond to our public investment. So that's our team. You see, we have a range of disciplines, areas of expertise, and we sew it all together in a master plan. The next slide. To remind everyone, what is it that we're doing? What is this project? So the Livable Centers Initiative is a program sponsored by the Atlanta Regional Commission. And it's very special in that it focuses on alternatives to the car. A lot of our dollars, GDOT, Georgia Department of Transportation, and all these federal dollars, you know, it's build more lanes, build more capacity, cars, cars, cars. So we're so fortunate that ARC had the foresight to put together a program that said, look, let's give communities resources so they can figure out how you can have alternatives, how we can walk, how we can bike, how we can get to transit better. And once we get off of transit, how do we get from transit to my place of employment or from transit to my home, that last mile, that little last leg. So the program funds to help communities do that. The program funds master plans, these kinds of studies. But as you know, and as the community and the folks on the line, I hope have seen in the along Broad Street, all of the streetscape projects that are currently under construction, the LCI program funds those kinds of construction projects as well. So it's not just a study, that's the beginning of it. It's then how do we implement it? And there is dollars, you become eligible for the construction dollars. There's also other implementation tools. So things like housing studies or wayfinding design or a range of other activities, including creative placemaking, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, how to arts and culture to help us create a great sense of place. So that's the big program where some of the funding has come from. The city, of course, you have your match to cover the cost of it. The graph that you see on the screen is the extent of the study area. We look at it and focus in on within those boundaries. But of course, we're looking out immediately outside as well to see external factors that are going to really influence what happens here in the core and the heart of the historic downtown. So in 2009, you got funding from ARC to do your first master plan. And this is the update to that. So we're not going to start from scratch. We're not going to reinvent any wheels. We're going to build on what you did for that initial master plan and see what still works and what we need to enhance and change and modify given our changing conditions. So next slide, please. So I gave a mouthful, but now you have some words there in front of you of some of the things I was describing about how this master plan, this particular kind, looks at public infrastructure investment as a way to think of how then to be smart to stimulate the development we want. And so it's using pedestrians, bike, ped paths, streetscapes, things like that. In addition to your special program, your special approach, which is putting in the center how you can a way to enhance the cultural arts, how you can enhance the idea of having creative placemaking and a place that is memorable as part of your economic underpinnings, but also as a way to have a beautiful place to live and for people to enjoy. You also wanted us to focus on a housing strategy. So that's a big piece of this too. So we got the arts and urban design, and then we got show me the money and let's figure out our housing and all those fundamentals of our economy and of this study area. Next slide, please. The project goes until November. So we did a kickoff with your staff and we've been putting together, pulling all the documents, putting together data, and we put together an assessment. So we have a really lengthy report that looks at all these disciplines, your transportation and construction and market data and housing and land use. So we have a big report. And we've just been sharing that with staff, and staff is going to give us feedback. And when it's ready for prime time, we'll put it on the webpage, make sure everyone has access to it. But we use that information to launch our community meeting that we had on the 18th last Thursday. And you had a great turnout, and I'll get into that in just a little bit. The next event is going to be in April. So I really hope we can take advantage of tonight and that folks mark their calendars, literally get out your Outlook and mark it for April 15th. We're going to have a more extended workshop. It's going to be a little more substantive. We're going to go in depth and a lot more interactive. The meeting we had on Thursday was to introduce the project, get everybody oriented. We did a little bit of warm-up exercises, but really April's where we're going to roll up our sleeves and look at the maps street by street and look at what the community wants. But we're also going to inform the community of the conditions and what are some of our opportunities here. So people will be armed with information and we don't have to make things up. We can be testing the ideas against the market realities, against the funding strategies, against what our housing needs really are, and also population growth and those sort of trends. So all of that will happen April 15th. Mark your calendar. We hope everyone can come. And also, if you can't, please do also share with others to ask them to come and join it. It will be virtual, but we have a way of managing even very large groups. That's the next event. We'll have a couple more. We'll have another community meeting as we start to sew together the ideas and our strategy, and we'll work with both experts and your staff and with you all. We're looking forward to other officials that are and leaders in the community to put together a set of recommendations. And we're looking at September to have a draft that would be ready to then bring to you ideally by November. If we get it done faster, great. But we want to make sure it is exactly what you need and that everybody has a chance to vet the different ideas, and especially something that's going to be phased over time to make sure we can pay for things incrementally. We don't have an endless purse, a bottomless, you know, endless amount of money. So we want to be really smart about the phasing of any of the recommendations. Next slide, please. So going back, I mentioned 2009, you had a study and there's a master plan. I believe it's still on your webpage for folks who want to recall what it all contained. What you see in front of you are just some of the graphics, the line, obviously this, well, not necessarily obviously, but the line going from the bottom left to the screen to the right, top right, that's, you know, Broad Street. And the downtown is where you see the cluster of colors, if you will. And then when you zoom into that, and that's what you see up on the other graphic, was showing how when you zoom in these different nodes, what were some of the ideas of how buildings could be laid out and what kind of uses made the best sense for your downtown. And so it's not that you're necessarily going to, I know you can't see this very well. I'm just giving you this reference of this drawing that is available. So next, we can go to the next slide, because we're going to build on this. It won't be exactly the same. We're going to see what still makes sense and what doesn't. And another piece of another focus has been the Lightning neighborhood. And it was to see all of the work since the 2009 LCI, and especially the strategic plan that you had in 2019 to build on that and work with all the data and information about what the community needed there, but also the amazing investment that the city has already gone forward in purchasing properties. We're gonna work with you to figure out how to leverage that, best leverage that, and work with the community on that as well. So that's another focus. And we're also looking at some of the other neighborhoods that I feel like in the other LCI, the original one, they didn't get much attention. We really focused only on the your team in 2009 focused on the downtown. But we're gonna look around throughout the neighborhoods that are within the boundary study area. Next slide, please. I know you can't read this at all, but I just wanted to, this is just a show and tell kind of slide. That's a long list. So, you know, when you look at these pictures right in front of you, that graphic, there's pretty pictures. How do we get to those pretty pictures and make that a built reality? Well, it takes all of these projects. You know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So it's all these are projects that will are meant to get, you know, this built environment. That's your vision. What you see, you could notice that there were some items that are in red, and I'm not going to read these again. Literally, this is for wallpaper, just the sense of, wow, that's a long list. And that's only a part of the list that your staff and yours, you know, over the years, some of your predecessors and other departments and agencies came together to start chipping away at this list of projects. And what you see in red, notice that there's red, those are a bunch of things that you already have complete. So you had a big list, but you have been checking off the list, and it's very impressive. Not all smaller communities are able to get through their list. That is the reason I have this wallpaper, so you can see and we can show off and your citizens can applaud the work that your government, that you all have been doing to build and transform your downtown. Next slide, please. I don't know if you can move that just a little bit, adjust it. So this is just a schemata of our initial taking a look at what is happening and what are some of the opportunities. It's the kind of map that we'll work with in the design charrette, the workshop in April, and just looking at different ways to connect the dots, if you will, from where you have your gateways to where you have your historic resources. And we're going to overlay on that where you've identified the location for art installations and how to begin building your sense of a cultural arts within the built environment. So it's just a schemata. It's just a beginning sketch of looking at where the focus, it makes sense. Where you see that number two, for example, now, so that's the neighborhood on the other side of the railroad tracks. That's an area that I was saying didn't get much attention in your first LCI in that 2009 master plan. And we thought we need to really take a little deeper dive of all the dynamic that's going on there, for example. But we'll work with the community about to understand your preferences and marry that with what the market demand is. So that's sort of the sweet spot. What is it we want? And what will the market support that, so that it can be viable, the development and the proposals we make. So the next slide, please. That one, I'm sorry, that is hard to see. It's just a reminder, not everybody, I'm not gonna assume everybody knew about the creative placemaking project, the study that you did last year, but what you see those little dots are locations within on a map where you had identified ways to put some sort of installation or like the alleyway to enhance the alleyway such that it becomes an inviting, public, enjoyable space. Similarly with the underpass and where you might have murals or other kinds of installations. So you already have that plan and our job is to build on that, price it out, figure out a time frame, figure out who, when, and how it can actually get executed. So that's part of this project is building on that strategy. And that's also on your webpage for folks who aren't familiar with it. And the next slide, please. And these you've seen, I'm sure. On the top is your existing conditions. And on the bottom were some of the renderings that were generated of from that placemaking. And not going to linger here very long. I'm just reminding everyone you have this vision already. You've got this to build from. And the next slide, I think, is also some additional renderings. You have, I love that the renderings here, we also have another rendering of the daytime of what it could look like. And you have the one on the left here is of the evening of the alleyway, how it could transform and be an inviting, usable space. Post-COVID, where we can once again gather and be around each other. Next slide, please. I'm jumping right into some of the data. This is just as a reference, some of the information that we share with the community to put some perspective on where we are and what opportunities we have. And the what you see is circled. So on the top blue says study area. And then the red is the city of Fairburn, that's the broader city. And then the MSA, that means the municipal statistic area of Atlanta. So just think the region, if you will. So Atlanta region. And it's showing, it's comparing how we stand up compared to the region as a whole and even within the city of Fairburn itself. And so we see what's circled there is one example of our home values are lower. But that can also be a great opportunity because of starter homes and attracting young professionals who are looking for their starter homes. And in fact, it turns out that is an interesting part of your market profile of young professionals starting out here. The other opportunity you see on the right hand, a little boring little set of statistics there in writing, but it's boring. The type is boring, but it's an important note that as a region, the growth trends from 2010 to 2020, you see the growth trend there around 15% projected. And but you all, your city of Fairburn, you know, you're much higher than that, 20%. And another thing to keep in mind is with the way the Atlanta region is growing as a whole, it's impressive. It's intense. So this study that we're working will help position you. How would we take advantage of that growth that's it's currently happening there? How do we, what can we do to position ourselves to take advantage of it and bring the kind of growth that we do want? How do we attract that? Next slide. Population, I won't go much into this, except you see it's rising. And also similarly, jobs and population are both going to be interesting to watch. But the jobs matter. it'll help us understand, again, what kind of industry is hiring, what kind of industry do we need, what kind of workforce do we need for the kind of industry we want, those sort of technical matters related to the market. Next slide. So for the next slide, thanks. I'm not sure how much everyone's been seeing this. It's been fascinating to see how the housing real estate is just booming, has been booming these months. So much of our economy has been really battered, but housing prices have gone up and we actually have a shortfall of housing units. So this is really a prime moment for us, it seems to me, that we could take advantage of in the city of Fairburn to be supplying some of the shortage of housing units at a range of prices. Given this really, this hot, it's a hot market on the housing side. So that'll be something we'll take a close look at with you all. Next slide, please. So this is just saying about, this is just more of the kind of data about where, and this is obvious, you know this, where is it that the non-residential development, where is it gonna want to go? Well, where is it focused? Well, how do we define the kind of development that we want here? How do we take advantage of being near the airport without it consuming us and having more quality of life on the kind of industries that come into the city? Next slide, please. And then here's the what's it mean. So this is the opportunity. This is the opportunity for the study area. This is around how much you could absorb, given the kind of demand, the trends in demand, the real estate you have, the markets, and what we understand the longer range trends are going to be. This is the projection from your market analyst. She's seeing that you could add quite a few number of units, and it's not. We wanted to have a range. It's a low growth or a high growth, but in either case, it's a good number of new dwelling units. That's new people. That's new expenditures, and she also provided a range of what kind of retail, how much new office could actually be absorbed in your study area. And office is not a very hot market for where we are, but there is a demand. And for our study area, it would be a great mix. If you see what's here before you, retail, office, the multifamily and single family, there's a demand for that. Next slide, please. And I know I'm going through this quickly. I know some of you were at the meeting on Thursday, and there is a lot more behind all of this. I just wanted to orient you to what is it you're going to get? What is this market? What is the study delivering, the master plan going to deliver? And those are the topics that we look at, including, of course, the transportation. And then during the meeting, just to report to you all, we had such a great turnout. I think we had about 100 and... it was a little over 150 people had registered. So enough people were interested, over 100, I want to say it was over 150 people registered, even though not all of them showed up the evening of. That's a lot of people who touched the study and were aware of it. There were over 80 participants on the line on Thursday night. What we got from everybody, we received just about 40 questions asking from a range of things about transportation to reports, and people were giving ideas in their comments of how we could use different spaces for art installations or events. People wanted to know a lot more about the streetscape and some of the specific projects and the timing and delivery of all that. It was very interactive. We were really pleased to receive so much engagement that night. And we did a little poll. So most people online were from Fairburn, and I was so happy that about a quarter of the people said that they own businesses. So your business community was present, had a strong presence at the community meeting on Thursday. And when we asked people what their top concerns were on transportation, no surprise, congestion and sidewalks. Sidewalks came pretty close behind congestion. Sidewalks and access to sidewalks. And then we asked if you could pick just one type of cultural art or some amenity, a cultural amenity, what kind would it be? And we gave some options. And this surprised me. It was interesting results. 22 people, more people said they really thought they could only pick one kind. They would like to see more pop-up events, pop-up arts, pop-up performance or installation. So that was number one. I didn't expect to see that necessarily. And then community performance facility, you see about 14 people said that. And then split evenly, arts festivals and public installation. So that was just one of the ways we wanted to just start getting a feel from the community and also who was attending that evening. I'm going to get in trouble because I'm not remembering the huge numbers of people who also saw on Facebook and YouTube. You had your communications team did a great job on the social media side. And so you really got a lot of traction. I want to say it was about 188 touches, if you will. And that was last week. So there's been more since then. So you're getting a lot of visibility. Next slide. So just a reminder, April 15th is another event. We will be posting the assessment report as soon as that's finalized and ready for prime time. We'll post that on the web, or we'll request your communications folks to post that on the web. We asked on Thursday, we asked folks to tell their neighbors. Please send us emails with thoughts, questions, and do check out the webpage, the city's webpage, for additional resources. And we'll be putting more and more resources on there as we go through the project and get a feel of the direction that the project is going. That's my whirlwind tour. I'm briefing you on launching the project. And I want to thank you for allowing the collaborative firm and our team to do this exciting work with your community. And if you have any questions, I'm here for you. Thank you.
Okay, Council, do you have any questions for Michelle? She presented on Thursday night, which was February the 18th, and there was quite a few people that attended, and it was very informative. Council members, do you have any questions or comments for Michelle concerning the downtown master plan? Okay, Michelle. Doesn't look like anyone have any questions for you. I just want to say thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to the next meeting that we will be having.
As we will too, as well. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor, it looks like you're muted. There we go.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is going to be the adoption of the City Council agenda for tonight. Madam Clerk, could you call the agenda items, please?
The first item we have on the agenda is from the Human Resources Department. It's the Group Health Insurance with United Healthcare. For Mayor and Council to approve the as-is renewal of the current United Healthcare Medical and Prescription Drug Plan with no change to the employee contribution. Number two, the group dental and vision insurance and FSA contracts. For Mayor and Council to approve renewing the dental and vision coverage with United Healthcare as-is for the city's sole 2021-2022 plan year dental vision insurance offering, and to continue with Admin America as the FSA administrator at the IRS allowed maximum. Number three, Human Resources, the health insurance deductible reimbursement for the 2021-2022 plan year. For Mayor and Council to approve a 100% reimbursement of in-network deductible expense incurred for medical claims and 0% for out-of-network medical claims. Number four is the Human Resources Department. For Mayor and Council to approve a revised opt-out stipend plan document, clarifying the types of outside coverage that would qualify an individual for this benefit. Number five is from Property Management, Mr. Harvey Stokes. For Mayor and Council to approve the amended lease agreement between the City of Fairburn and Ursula and Rick
Junior Hilly, the owners of the Casablanca restaurant. Number six is the utility department, Mr. John Martin, for mayor and council to approve task order number 143 with integrated science and engineering for system identification, project bidding assistance, and construction oversight for the storm drain lining project for an amount not to exceed $22,800. Item number seven is from planning and zoning, Ms. Tarika Peaks, for mayor and council to approve the final plat 2020124 Strack Development. Item number eight is from the engineering department, Mr. Lester Thompson, for mayor and council to approve the supplement agreement number three to the PFA with GDOT for the I-85 at State Route 74 Sonoya Road interchange project. Item number nine is the engineering department as well, Mr. Lester Thompson, for mayor and council to approve an amendment agreement with Trans System Corporation for the I-85 at State Route 74 Sonoya Road interchange project. And item number 10 is from Parks and Recreation, Mr. John Culbreth, for mayor and council to discuss and approve the partial opening of Duncan Park for walking only.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Council, you've heard the 10 agenda items on the agenda for tonight. Is there a motion to approve?
So move, Councilman Smallwood.
Councilman Whitmore.
Okay, the motion has been made by Councilman Smallwood and seconded by Councilman Whitmore. All those in favor?
Aye.
Are those any opposing? That motion carries 6-0. The council agenda stands approved for this evening. Okay, the next item on the agenda is public comments, Madam Clerk.
Madam Mayor, we do not have any public comments tonight.
Okay. All right. So we'll move on to item number one. Madam Clerk.
Sorry, I was just about to start screen sharing. Number one, group health insurance with United Healthcare, for mayor and council to approve the as-is renewal of the current United Healthcare medical and prescription drug plan with no change to the employee contribution.
And this presentation is by Karen Larkin, who's with BKS, our insurance broker. Karen, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Mayor and Council. I know it's not the same. Can you hear me?
I do.
Yes.
It's not the same not being in front of everybody, but it's good to be able to see you and talk to you tonight about your employee benefit program. With me are two of my colleagues that you all have met in the past. Jack Rem and Dan Knackers. And just to get into the presentation, I'm going to turn this over to Dan Knackers. He's going to go through all the steps that we've taken this year to negotiate and present our recommendations as stated by the clerk. So Dan will be going through the presentation, and if you have any questions, please feel free to jump in. And if not, we'll have a question and answer session after the presentation.
Great. Thank you, Karen, and good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I believe the city clerk who's working on the slide, if you go to the slideshow tab at the top, if you want to get this in full screen, over to your right a little bit.
A little bit up further. There you go. One more.
Now, the issue is that I've got the Zoom stuff up there and it won't allow me to go over there. That's why I was trying to see.
Okay.
Do it.
And if you'd like, I can share it on my screen, if that would be easier.
Okay. Would you do that, Dan?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay. Can everyone see my screen now? Should be in full screen?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Well, again, like Karen said, I'm Dan Knackers. I'm a senior benefits consultant with BKS Partners. I've been out to the council meetings over the past several years. So we have a lot to go through today. I'm going to jump right in. Feel free at any point to stop me, ask questions as we go along. And then we'll obviously leave time at the end of the presentation as well to answer any questions. To start out, I wanted to go through a kind of a background of the claims. When the underwriters are beginning to work on your renewal for the city, they are essentially looking at a snapshot. So they're going to look at the last 12 months that they have data for, in addition to any large claims. So they're going to look at how much premium has been paid by the city and how much claims are being paid out throughout the year. And then what are we looking at in terms of large claims? And of those, are we expecting additional claims for the upcoming year? Are they large claims where maybe it was a one-off situation where somebody was hospitalized and now they're back to work and no further issues? So those are all the things that they're looking at. So this first slide here just kind of shows you the background. So when they pull the renewal, they're looking for this year at the period of October 2019 through September 2020. And then I added in October 2020 as well because we've gotten that data since then. A lot of times we like to go back to the insurance company if that last month looks positive. So if the claims are going down for that month, we like to use that to our advantage. So I included that on here just so you can kind of see how these are running. But overall, for the 12-month period of October through September of 2020, we're looking at a loss ratio of about 94%, which is it's a high loss ratio. And to put that in perspective, what we talk about every year when we go through this is that the insurance companies are looking for about a 25% buffer between paid premium and paid claims. And that's to cover the cost of trend. That's to cover all the administrative costs that go along with your network service fees, paying their administrative staff to administer your plan. So we're on the high end of that, obviously, at 94%. Essentially, what that means is that UnitedHealthcare is paying almost a dollar in claims for every dollar in premium that they're collecting from the city. And what really stands out to me when I look at that is with COVID, this was a year where we saw a lot of our clients had a better year than normal this year because you had several months during the middle of the year where people couldn't go see their doctor. So the claims were down because that was essentially 3 months of strictly emergency-related claims that we were seeing. And you can see it right here, too. You see March, April, May. You had a really big drop in your claims utilization. The issue is that then you see towards the end of the year, it starts to spike up in June, and then from July on, you're paying less in claims than UnitedHealthcare is paying in premiums every single month. So as an overall snapshot, you know, when we saw this report come in before we got the renewal, we had an expectation that we were probably going to be looking at a renewal release from UnitedHealthcare probably in the 20s as far as its percentage increase. And then going forward, like I mentioned, the other half of this claims that we're looking at is the large claims. So for purposes of this meeting, for HIPAA privacy rules, I don't have any specific data on here. So we do have the total dollar amount. So this is over that 12-month period of October 19 through September 20. You can see we had 11 claimants, and these are individuals here. So each claimant is a different individual that's covered under the plan. So we had 11 people over that 12-month period that had claims in excess of $25,000. That's a high number of large claims for a group of your size or of the city size. The other thing that really stands out here, obviously, you see these top four claims. You have four claims that are over $75,000 in a 12-month period, one of which almost hit $300,000 in paid claims. These are ongoing, so anything that's listed here is open, is ongoing. You do have one claimant where this individual is no longer covered under the plan, so that's listed as closed. You also have another claimant down here that's an active individual on the plan, but it's closed because it's no longer an ongoing claim. So we still have nine claimants that are ongoing, including all of these top large claims. And just a couple other things that aren't pointed out on here. So this very top large claim, this one's been around for a while. It spiked up this year. It seems like there was probably a hospitalization involved with that. And then the second claim, we have a situation with a large, expensive medication that's being taken that's driving the majority of that cost. And the unfortunate situation with that particular claim is that you have somebody that's taking a medication where there's no alternative medication on the market. So as long as that person is covered under this plan, we're expecting $150,000 just in pharmacy claims for that individual alone. So that's an automatic expected claim over the next 12-month period. So just in general, a lot of activity, pretty similar to what we've seen over the last couple of years, unfortunately. So as we dive into the renewal, like I mentioned, when we looked at the claims before we got the initial renewal from UnitedHealthcare, we were prepared to expect about a 20 to 25% increase from UnitedHealthcare. They actually came in a little lower. I think a lot of that has to do with your tenure with UnitedHealthcare. The insurance companies tend to be a little bit easier to work with when, you know, they're looking at a client that's not jumping around from insurance company to insurance company every year. So the initial renewal release came in at about 16.8%. And when I say initial, that is the renewal that we get right from underwriting before we have any negotiations with them. So we had lots of back and forth. We had conversations with UnitedHealthcare's account management team, their underwriting management team, and we were able to successfully get the as-is renewal down from that 16.8% increase down to just over 8% above current, which is an 8% increase given the amount of claims that we just went through. We feel is a very, very reasonable renewal offer. The way I have this set up right here below, so you can see, based on your current enrollment in the plan, the total monthly cost is about $154,000. This renewal at the 8.16% brings that monthly cost up to about $166,000, which is a total annual dollar increase of about $150,000. And for purposes of this presentation, we're assuming here that there's no change to the employee contributions. And the reason why we're making that recommendation to not change the employee contributions is there's a few factors. One is COVID. It's been a very disruptive year. COVID hit really right after all the decisions were finalized last year. You know, we had finished open enrollment meetings. We had gone through the entire renewal process last year, and then COVID hit. And at that time, you know, last year we made plan changes. We made changes to the employee contributions. And that's been the case the last couple of years. So with that, one of the things that we're seeing with a lot of our clients is a need for some stability for employees right now during this time. You know, it's not often that we're seeing as many employers that are renewing their benefits as we are right now, but that's kind of the state that COVID has put on the market because it's been such a disruptive year and financially and everything else from a municipal standpoint of the things that the police officers have had to endure this year. And so there's been a lot of disruption this year, and that's why we're making the recommendation there to leave the employee contributions as is. And then when we get into the ancillary benefits, your dental insurance, originally we were looking at a 7.5% increase. We were able to negotiate that down as well to about a 1.5% increase. The city is paying 25% of the employee cost on dental. So for dental, we're assuming that the city would continue to pay that 25%. And you'll see over here the increase to the employees. If you're family coverage, it's a little less than $2 a month. And when you break that down into pay periods, you're talking about less than a dollar a pay period change in the dental contributions for a very rich plan that's currently in place with UnitedHealthcare. The vision insurance, when we moved the dental and vision over to UnitedHealthcare 2 years ago, the vision was included with a three-year rate guarantee. So this is the last year of that three-year rate guarantee coming up. So you'll see here that there's no changes to the vision premiums for the upcoming year. And then to getting the marketing, so we did go out to market this year. We weren't really sure what to expect. You know, I think with how the claims were going, I was expecting that we were probably going to see a lot of decline in quotes. Usually we see that when you have really large amounts of large claim utilization. And when you have those loss ratios that are in the 90% or higher, you usually don't see a lot of carriers that are willing to take on a risk like that. But we are seeing that the market has been very aggressive so far this year. I think a lot of that has to do with last year, once COVID hit, like I mentioned, you saw a lot more employers trying to stick to stability more than looking at the bottom line. So we were seeing a lot of clients that were renewing with their incumbent carriers and not going out to market, or if they were going out to market, they weren't making changes anyway. So I think the aggressiveness of the market is probably coming from insurance companies trying to ramp back up business and bring in some new business that they didn't bring in last year. So to go through each carrier, Aetna declined a quote. They were the first one that we got back due to the high utilization and ongoing large claims. They released an email to us to let us know that they were not competitive and were not releasing a proposal. Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, they came in with the most competitive offer. They were actually just below current premiums for a plan that was similar to the benefits. The concern that we have with that is we went through the claims with you all earlier. The concern with going to a carrier that is so far below the renewals and so much more competitive than what we saw for the rest of the market is moving to Anthem and then them having underpriced their premiums to a point where next year the city is looking at a massive increase because there wasn't enough premium going in the pot to pay out the claims, and then the insurance company is scrambling. The really bad thing about that is when you're in that situation, it's extremely hard to go to market because nobody wants to take a chance of that. You're going to be looking at a similar increase across the board, all because you went for the lowest cost carrier, and we've seen it many times in the past. So that's the big concern there with changing to Anthem. And then on top of that, just the disruption of changing carriers, because you're going to have prescription drugs that are covered right now that won't be covered under their plan. You're going to have administrative disruption of the burden of changing carriers and collecting forms and everything that goes with that. And then on the employees, you know, that is, like I said, if they're taking prescriptions that aren't on there, or maybe they're taking a prescription that right now they're paying a lower cost and with the new one they're going to pay a higher cost, or they have a pre-authorization that they've already gotten approved with United Healthcare. Well, now they have to go through that all over again with the new insurance company. So there's a lot of moving pieces that cause disruption for the employees and the city staff. And then to talk about the rest of the market, kind of where we got the concern from Anthem was that the rest of the marketing that we got back was pretty much in line with where United Healthcare is. Cigna came in for a similar plan to current, about 4% above current. And typically we see that there's usually about a 4 or 5% marketing discount that you get. So as a new business client, when they're trying to bring in new business, we usually see that they give about 4 to 5% concessions to try and bring in the business. And then again, usually you see that on the back end at the renewal because there's a little bit of an underpricing there. So at 4%, you're 4% below where the United Healthcare renewal is coming in, which is about what we would expect to see from the market. Then we saw Humana. Humana's rates actually came in right in line. They actually ended up being a little bit higher premium than United Healthcare's final increase, but they used a kind of different tactic that we're starting to see in the marketplace now, where they were offering a one-month premium credit. So they're saying, okay, we're going to give you, you know, slightly increased premium above United Healthcare's renewal, but we're going to give you a month where we're not going to charge you a premium. Well, again, you know, that's nice for the plan year, but then next year you're already a couple percent higher than where United Healthcare is now, and they're going to try and get that 1 month back that they gave. The insurance companies, we see their stocks and they're in it for profit. So there's concern across the board with how strange the marketing came back here. And then you see Kaiser. We gave Kaiser, all the carriers had a deadline of February 9th to get us their proposals to make sure that we had enough time to put everything together and have it over to you all so that you had a chance to review for tonight's meeting. Kaiser did not get us their proposal in time, so they're not included in this presentation. I just wanted to point that out, that we did go to market with Kaiser. We just didn't get their proposal in time. Jumping into the health reimbursement account and the flexible spending account, no proposed changes to either of these plans right now. The health reimbursement arrangement, which we refer to as HRA, that is paying 100% of in-network deductible costs for members on the medical benefits. That program has been in place for several years, dating back to even before UnitedHealthcare's time as the plan administrator. The utilization for 2020 on that health reimbursement arrangement was just under $140,000. For 2021, we expect that it should be around a similar amount. In that assumption, we're assuming that it's a 28% utilization, which on average over the last 5 or 6 years, it's been closer to 25%. But we like to put a conservative estimate in there just to be on the safe side in case there are more claims than usual on that HRA. And then for your flexible spending account, there's no changes to the IRS maximums on these plans. These plans allow employees to set aside pre-tax dollars into an account to use for medical expenses. And then you have the dependent care account that allows them to set aside money pre-tax for qualifying dependent care expenses. So if you have a child that's in daycare, you can set aside money to pay for those expenses pre-tax. Those programs have been very, very popular over the years with the employees. They're great programs. Our recommendation is to keep those in place and continue to allow the employees to set aside that money pre-tax to pay for those expenses throughout the year and save some money on their taxes. The next topic on here is the opt-out stipend. The city's opt-out stipend is a benefit that we put in place, I believe it was back in 2017, and that program was put in place for the individuals who are not enrolled in the city's medical plan. It was put in place as a benefit for those individuals. You know, the city's paying a lot of money for the individuals who are covered under the city's medical plan, and so this was put in as an option for those who have coverage available through their spouse's employer or, you know, through TRICARE to be able to get a benefit through the city still, even though they're not actually on the city's medical plan. One of the things with that is there's been a little bit of confusion on what constitutes qualifying coverage for this plan. So what we're recommending here, I've included the language that we've put as an amendment to the existing plan documents to really clear this up. So it says qualified coverage is coverage through your spouse's employer, medical coverage through a former employer. So if you have a retiree health plan through a former employer, or if you're enrolled in COBRA through a former employer, and then as well as TRICARE. Oh, sorry about that. As long as the TRICARE is being paid for by the individual and it meets minimum essential coverage. Coverages that would be excluded would be things like coverage that's not minimum essential coverage, Medicare. Employers are not allowed to incentivize employees to go on Medicare, which is why that is specifically excluded. Individual marketplace coverage, as well as any government-provided health care plan for which you do not pay a premium, which includes Medicaid. So we felt like these bullet points, adding these in the plan documents, will help really clarify exactly what is qualified and what is not qualified as eligible coverage to get that stipend. And so finally, the last item on here is our recommendation, which we went over throughout this, but just a reminder, our recommendation is that the city renew the current medical, dental, and vision through UnitedHealthcare, as well as the health reimbursement arrangement and the flexible spending account, with no changes to the employee contributions for the medical plan. In addition, we're recommending to adopt the amended language for the opt-out stipend that I just went over. And just some background to clarify exactly why we're making the recommendation we are, and I touched on this a little bit, but the first point is that we've seen high utilization on the claims pretty consistently since joining UnitedHealthcare in 2015. And actually, when I look back at the reports from 2015 when the city joined UnitedHealthcare to current, the loss ratio has been over 100%. So UnitedHealthcare is paying essentially a dollar in claims, like I said, for every dollar that the city's paying in premiums. And usually we see a little bit of an ebb and flow, and for the city, it's just been, it seems like one bad year after another. So, you know, hopefully this upcoming year will be a better year, but as long as those large claims and high prescriptions are out there, we do have concern that we are still going to experience some high claim utilization. As I talked about with the savings potential for moving to Anthem, you have a lot of potential there in savings, but the real concern is for next year's renewal if the initial rates are set too low. So what I did was I said, okay, over the last 13 months, the loss ratio has been 96%. And Anthem gave us what they call a medical loss ratio renewal agreement, saying that if your loss ratio over the 12-month period runs at X percent, we're going to guarantee that we're not going to give you an increase of over this amount. So for a 96% loss ratio, Anthem's renewal agreement said that they would not give an increase of more than 27.5% next year. So to put that in perspective, if you got a 27.5% next year based on Anthem's rates, that's over $500,000 in premium increase. So like I mentioned, you could be potentially saving money this year for a really catastrophic renewal next year. So that is what we're really trying to avoid here. And as I mentioned, the average as increase before any decided plan changes from UnitedHealthcare year over year has been about 14%, with loss ratios averaging just over 100%. So UnitedHealthcare has been very fair to work with, very good with negotiating with us year over year to make sure that the city is putting enough premium in the pot to pay the claims, but not overcharging the city. And then, like we talked about, there's a lot of disruption when you're talking about a change in carriers, and doing that when you're in the middle of a pandemic, when employees have had plan changes and deduction changes the last several years, is another reason why we're making the recommendation to not only keep the plans the same, but keep the employee medical contributions the same. And with that, that is the end of the presentation. So I'm going to open it up. Karen, Jack, and I are here to answer any questions that you have. I'm happy to go back and go through any slides if there's any questions.
Council, the floor is open for any questions for Dan or Karen concerning this renewal.
Mayor, this is Mayor Pro Tem Heath. I do have one question.
Yes, sir.
And that's dealing with the ambulance service. I had to go to the hospital in an ambulance a few months back, and I almost had a heart attack when I got the bill. I thought that the insurance would cover it. Is that a possibility? Is there added a great deal of added cost for that or something?
So ambulance charges are a little unique. It's a problem that is just part of the medical industry problem right now that we're seeing, and where you're seeing a lot of balance bill issues. Ambulances are typically going to be private companies that are coming in there. I think for the city, the problem has been that I think Grady is the closest ambulance service that's actually in network with UnitedHealthcare. And it's not just UnitedHealthcare, nope. It's all the insurance companies. Nope. So there's a lot of these private ambulance companies that are not in network with any insurance company, and they're the ones that are getting the calls and the first to arrive.
Well, from Fairburn at Stage area in the middle of town to Piedmont Fett was, I think it was $2,822. Ride in the Grady ambulance, and you're saying that Grady is covered under the insurance?
They should be covered as a network. I think in those situations, my recommendation would be if I can touch base with you separately on that.
Sure.
We'll get with UnitedHealthcare to work on that claim for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
Council, the floor is still open. Are there any other questions for Karen or Dave?
Yes, Mayor, Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Dan, thank you for the presentation and the comprehensiveness of the data. I really appreciate it. And I agree with your assessment relative to going to a different carrier, because it is disruptive, and longevity and stability does carry a little weight. My question is regarding, every year, we've been fortunate that UnitedHealthcare has been willing to cover us, given that we are a small group. And that our utilization rate is high. My question is about any advice or guidance that UnitedHealthcare is providing us, and what are they doing relative to case management on these cases to help with cutting down the cost. And then also about the drug formulary. What is their policy regarding that? And I know you mentioned the one unique drug that is being used, but that's an outlier. But other than that, what are they saying or doing to assist us?
Yeah, those are great questions. So first, to address the case management side, anytime you have a claim that is an ongoing issue, whether it be, diabetics or cancers, anything that's an ongoing large claim, typically a case manager is assigned to those to work with the individual to make sure that they are getting the care that they need timely so that those claims don't turn into, even more catastrophic issues. So, I can say for the large claims that are out there that are ongoing large claims, they do proactively reach out to the members. It is up to those individuals then to work with UnitedHealthcare and work on the plans that are set in place for them. The other side of that is a lot of the large claims that are ongoing are not health or lifestyle related claims. The largest claim that's on there has somebody who is on infusions on a regular basis. And unfortunately with those claims, There's nothing that you can do to reduce the cost. The infusions cost what they cost, and there's really nothing UnitedHealthcare can do. And similarly with those prescriptions, I know it's only a few prescriptions that are at the top of that list, but your top three prescription drugs, I'm looking at the list right now, amount for 60% of your prescription drug spend. So that top large claim, or that second large claim on there, has $155,000 worth of prescription drugs in a 12-month period. And unfortunately, it's a drug that doesn't have an alternative. So that, like I mentioned earlier, is just going to be there as long as that person is taking that until there is a generic equivalent or a biosimilar available in the marketplace.
And also to add to Dan's comments is that the UnitedHealthcare does have a robust managed care case management system because they, their goal too is to try to move the care into areas and facilities where the cost is not as great as if you're in the hospital versus, so they're looking at these large claims because they have a vested interest not to have the claims go any higher than what is reasonable. The same thing with formularies, they have a whole team of physicians and providers from the different specialties, and they're always reviewing as a group the different types of prescriptions that are lower cost that can save the employer's dollars and their book of business.
Okay, and then my second question has to do with the employee contribution. Is that an increase over last year? And how much?
We're recommending that we that the city not increase the employee contribution.
So it's flat.
Based on this recommendation, it's going to remain the same.
Fantastic. Okay. And then my last question has to do with the wellness program, if it still exists. And, you know, what could you just, for the record, refresh our memory on what that entails and what benefit that we receive as a result of that?
A good question. Dan, you want, I know you're talking a lot with Linda Johnson right now.
Yeah, yeah. So Linda and I have been talking about the wellness program. As Ms. Portis-Jones, I know you remember because I know you've been very involved on the wellness program, but we had an individual that was managing the program at Fairburn along with some of the various departments were assigning somebody to be part of the wellness team. And at that point, we were meeting monthly and putting together events. And since then, the individual that was running it has, I believe, moved on into a different position. She's no longer handling the wellness program, and we've seen drop-off since then. So Linda and I have been talking about getting that wellness program ramped back up. We were actually talking this morning and have a call with the company tomorrow about some wellness initiatives to kick off the new plan year, get that wellness committee back up and running, and start doing some educational events with our wellness director, Dr. Pat. She'll be able to do wellness events, you know, educational webinars throughout the year for employees, get back to doing the steps challenges and various activities to encourage wellness with the city employees. And, you know, we do see, you know, after several years of having those programs in place, they do tend to seem to help with the claims a little bit. But I think more than anything, the wellness programs are really just great from a cultural standpoint, boosting employee morale, getting people engaged. So that's really the goal with that program, is to get that back up and running and show the city that the city does care about the employees' health and well-being.
All right, and then we do or do not receive any financial benefit for participating?
We do receive a wellness fund. Yeah, we receive a $5,000 wellness fund from United Healthcare every year that is specifically to be used for wellness-related purposes. So we have to get approval from United Healthcare for use of that fund throughout the year, and then once certain those items are approved and paid for, then they are reimbursed by United Healthcare.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councilwoman Portis-Jones. Council members, the floor is still open for any questions concerning the group health insurance within United Healthcare. Okay, Dan, you and Karen, looks like we've completed the portion for the group health insurance. Council members, does someone have anything they needed to add? Okay. Is there a motion on the floor to approve the group health insurance with United Healthcare?
So moved. Mayor Pro Tem Heath.
Second, Councilwoman Davis.
The motion has been made and properly second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposing? That motion passes 6-0. Thank you so much. The next agenda item, Madam Clerk.
Next item is from the Human Resources Department. It's for the group dental and vision insurance and FSA contracts for Mayor and Council to approve renewing the dental and vision coverage with United Healthcare as is for the city's sole 2021-2022 plan year dental vision insurance offering and to continue with Admin America as the FSA administrator at the IRS allowed maximum.
Karen, are you and Dan both are going to do this presentation?
So everything, all those agenda items were included in this one presentation.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So the recommendation on the dental and vision would be to renew those as is. There's only a very small increase in the employee dental contributions with that 1.5% increase.
Okay. Council, we've heard the presentation for the group health insurance, which included the group dental and vision. Is there a motion on the floor to approve?
A question, Mayor.
Okay, I'm sorry. Councilwoman Porter Jones, do you have any questions?
Yes. So tell me why the FSA is included with dental vision versus a standalone, because it's about a the employee's contribution so that they it's tax deductible. Why is it connected with Vision Dental? Just clarification.
Not meant to be connected. It was just written out under one document, but it can be separated out on a separate one.
Yes, because all right, so the document that we have says that the budget impact is $147,000, and that's for vision and dental premium. Is that correct?
Dan, is that the form you completed and helped Linda put together?
Yeah.
He's pulling it up.
Let me pull this up real quick. Yeah, Councilwoman Portis Jones, while I'm pulling this up, typically in the past on the agenda items, we put all of the ancillary, so the non-medical benefits, on one agenda item, which is why the FSA was lumped in there. I'm showing that the budget impact is only from the dental, which is an increase of $255.
Councilwoman Portis Jones, are you looking at item number two?
Let's see. Yes, group dental and vision insurance and FSA contracts.
Yes. Okay.
So, all right, the FSA is no budgetary impact to the city, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
Okay, so that is that, because that is the employee's contribution for their use of, all right. So I would ask if we could, just separate that, because this is the way it's reading, as if there is a budgetary impact, and it is not. So for clarity purpose,
no budget.
No reason to not to vote on it tonight. But I ask if we should just separate it for budgetary impact, and if you could just provide that revised document, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, that makes sense. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any other questions from council? Any comments? Okay, these items are separate, and so we're going to vote on item number two, which is the group dental and vision insurance, and Karen and Dan will list out the FSA separately. Is there a motion on the floor?
Mayor, so moved. Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Motion made by Councilwoman Portis Jones. Is there a second?
Second, Councilman Smallwood.
Seconded by Councilman Smallwood. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposing? That motion carries 6-0 for the group dental and vision insurance and the FSA contracts. The next item, Karen, you and Dan, is the health insurance deductible reimbursement for 2022 plan year. Just a short summary, because I know we've already gone over it.
Currently, the city pays the deductible for the employee and their families, and we just recommend that remain in place for the 21 plan year.
Okay, council members, do you have any questions for Karen or Dan concerning the health insurance deductible reimbursement? It will remain the same for the next plan year, 2021 and 2022. Hearing none, is there a motion on the floor to approve?
So moved, Councilwoman Davis.
Motion made by Councilwoman Davis. Is there a second?
Second. Mayor Pro Tem Alex Heath.
Seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Heath. All those in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposing? That motion carries 6-0. The last item on the agenda is item number four, the opt-out stipend. Karen, would you just say a few words with this?
Absolutely. The opt-out stipend is technically not changing. We're just amending the contract to make it more clear that in order to be eligible for the opt-out stipend, you must have qualified other insurance, as Dan had stated earlier in the presentation. And we're just recommending that we make those changes for clarity for the 2021 plan year.
Council members, do you have any questions concerning this opt-out stipend clarification? Hearing none, is there a motion on the floor to approve?
So moved, Councilwoman Davis.
Motion made by Councilwoman Davis. Is there a second?
Second, Councilman Smallwood.
Seconded by Councilman Smallwood. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposing? That motion carries 6-0.
I have one last question, a medical related question.
Okay. Is it concerning any of the?
No.
Okay.
No. It has to do with the new law in Georgia. I think it's Georgia only regarding surprise billing.
Okay, Karen.
So could you talk about what impact, if any, that will have on the bill that an employee would receive if they use the service, and how United Healthcare is planning to handle that? Are the costs defer to somebody else or to something else because the hospital, for example, would want to receive the full payment, but because of the cap, if I'm understanding that correctly, has been stipulated. So could you just explain what it is and what impact it will have?
Sure. Dan, do you want to take that?
Yeah. So the surprise billing is actually a federal bill that was passed that is set to be effective January of 2022.
Okay.
But what that law is going to do, it's going to protect people for situations where you go for example, if you have an emergency and you go to the hospital and you have a medical emergency procedure and your anesthesiologist is out of network. Right now in Georgia, there's no protections for members in those situations where you go in for procedure and one of your providers, even though a hospital may be in network, your doctor may be in network, you may have services that are done by other providers that you don't choose that are not in network. So the surprise billing is coming from those providers because employees and members are getting billed out of network charges for those services, even when they have no say in it. And it's something that we've run into a lot. Like I mentioned with anesthesiologists, pathologists, we see that happen with a lot.
Ambulance services.
Ambulance services. I mean, we see it a lot. And so that law is going to be put in place effective January 1st of 2022 to help stop those surprise bills so that members aren't being balance billed above what they would pay out of pocket if they were going to an in-network provider for that same service.
Okay, thank you. So could you you guys keep us abreast of that conversation and so that we are prepared for 2022?
Absolutely, yeah. As soon as we have more details from UnitedHealthcare on exactly how that's going to be administered, we'll make sure that we get that information out to the city and the employees.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you, Mayor.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome. Thank you, guys. Dan,
thank you.
Thank you so much for your presentation tonight. We appreciate it. And Karen, we'll be in touch later, either tomorrow or on Wednesday. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, Madam Clerk.
Next, we have item number 5 from Property Management, Mr. Harvey Stone.
Madam Clerk, are you on the line?
Yes, Mayor, I'm on the line. Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
Madam Mayor, for item number 5, we have Property Management, Mr. Harvey Stokes. for Mayor and Council to approve the amended lease agreement between the City of Fairburn and Ursula and Rick Jr. Healy, owners of the Casablanca restaurant.
Okay, Mr. Stokes.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening.
I come before you guys tonight with a small revision to the lease agreement for Casablanca, the restaurant at the depot that we're planning on opening. The only modification I want to do is change the date. If you can recall, the original lease called for them to start the leasing program January of 2020. Because of my failure to deliver this restaurant in time, 14 months later, we're looking at March of 2021. I'm sorry, March of 2021 being the opening date. The reason behind this was we had a hard time getting natural gas at that one facility over there. So we finally got that taken care of a couple of weeks ago. Now it's just a matter of Miss Ursula putting it in her name, the meter in her name. I get the health department in, and hopefully with my fingers crossed, we'll be open March 2021.
Okay.
It's just a matter of everything with the lease stays the same. It would change from January the 1st, 2020 to January the 1st, 2030, the 10-year lease would go from March the 1st, 2021 until March the 1st,
31.
Yes. But those are the only changes that we're making.
Okay.
If I could have Mayor and Council approval.
Okay. Council, do you have any questions for Mr. Stokes?
Yes, Mayor. This is Councilwoman Davis.
Yes, ma'am. This
may just be a typo error in the lease agreement that I'm looking at. I was in the packet. It is saying at the top that the lease agreement is entered into effect the first day of February 2019, in parentheses, effective date. But in the body, under Article 2 for term, it says your March 1st, 2021. Is the commencement date. So that's not jiving for me. So.
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Mayor?
Yes.
Attorney Turner.
Mr. Stokes, I suggest that we make that change to the agreement, both in the introductory paragraph, so that it conforms with the term included, and also to correct the name, Mr. Healy. It is correct in the original agreement. It's Ursula Healy and Richard Healy Jr.
Okay.
So I can make those changes. Let me get with you tomorrow and make those changes to that agreement, please. I don't think there's any reason it can't be approved tonight, noting that those changes will be made. And I'll just summarize them again to be clear that we will change the introductory paragraph to conform to the actual term, which is provided in Article 2, and we'll also correct the signatory to the agreement as Richard Healy Jr. instead of the way it is written in there.
Councilwoman Davis, are you okay with the attorney making those changes and sending that agreement tomorrow so that we can have it executed so that they can get into the building by March 1st?
Oh, that's fine, Mayor.
Okay. Okay, council members, does anyone else have any other questions or comments concerning this lease agreement?
Yes, Mayor. Just to add to that, and thanks for sending the attachments. Attorney Turner, I appreciate that. Under the signatures for Rick Healy Jr., it says individually and as a personal guarantee, but that language is not written under Ursula Healy's name. Is there a reason?
Attorney Turner?
There's no reason. It probably should say individuals.
I mean, should it be consistent? It should be consistent, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And I agree. We will make that change as well, just to make that clearer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. And then Mr. Stokes, just a broad question. I just wanted to understand why did we have difficulty with AGL on the gas? Is that a problem in that area downtown or just that particular lot?
No, ma'am.
No.
If the attorney office that used to rent leased that building from us, it had to have been way before their time. Someone had gas to that building. So the question was that a live line? The only way I could really tell without getting DOT approval to bore under that road and tie into the new system was to wait until Lester come and do the parking lot modification. That really helped me out. I got Atlanta Gaslight from Clayton County Division to come over. They did a test on that line. It's activated, and we do have natural gas coming through it.
Okay, so you're saying we had to wait until the parking lot was completed?
No, by Lester doing the parking lot, it helped me out rather than trying to get a permit from DOT to do some boring on the 29 highway.
I see. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
And also, at the same flip of the coin, we're looking at tying Armando's into natural gas as well, like to get rid of that LP tank that he has sitting in the front.
Oh, okay. All right. Is that a city cost? That'll be a city cost?
That is a free cost to the city.
Free cost?
Yes, ma'am. All he had to do is pay the gas bill.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. May I have a motion on the floor to approve the amended lease with the corrections that have been so noted by Attorney Randy Turner for the lease agreement between the City of Fairburn and the owners of Casablanca Restaurant.
So moved, Mayor Pro Tem Heath.
Second, motion, Councilwoman Davis. Sorry.
Motion made by Mayor Pro Tem Heath and seconded by Councilwoman Davis. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Stokes.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Madam Clerk.
Item number 6, we have the Utilities Department, Mr. John Martin, for Mayor and Council to approve task order number 143 with Integrated Science and Engineering for system identification, project bidding assistance, and construction oversight for the storm drain lining project for an amount not to exceed $22,800.
Mr. Martin? Are you showing, Mr. Martin?
He's on, Mayor.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Everyone hear me? Good evening.
Can hear you.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The Utilities Department bring to you task order 143 with Integrated Science and Engineer for Mayor and Council approval. This task order will encompass the system identification, project bidding assistance, and construction oversight for a storm drain lining project for amount not to exceed $22,800. Integrated Science will identify the storm drains that need a rehabilitation due to age, material failure within the pipe, and heavy debris. Relining these storm drain pipes is a method that preserves these pipes for years, especially the areas where roadways would have been open cut, causing heavy traffic issues and road closures. The EPD's MS4 reports and comments have recommended possible storm pipe relining as an improvement for these particular pipes. Areas such as Summerwood, Fireside Heights, Rivertown Road Estates, and Park Lane Forest are candidates for this project. Approval of this task order will begin the process of reducing trapped rainwater and clogged storm drains throughout the city. Seeking Mayor and Council's approval.
Okay. Council members, the floor is open for questions or comments to Mr. Martin concerning approval of task order 143 with integrated science.
Mayor, I have one question, Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Yes, Mr. Martin, for the system identification, is that citywide or just for those streets you just named?
It's the citywide.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I think we're going to start with those particular streets that have just been named, Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Okay, because so they're only identify the pipes named for those streets. And does that mean then a subsequent request or task order to do?
We'll probably come back with another task order, but right now we're having severe issues with the storm drains backing up, especially when we have rain. And so we're trying to target the most critical ones first.
All right. Thank you so much. And those streets again, Rivertown Estate, Summerwood, and what was the third one?
Fireside Heights.
Okay.
And Park Boulevard subdivision.
What was the last one?
Park Lane Forest.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Council members, do you have any other questions or comments for Mr. Martin concerning this task order? Hearing none, is there a motion on the floor to approve? I think I heard Councilwoman Portis-Jones first. Is there a second?
Second, Councilman Smallwood.
Seconded by Councilman Smallwood. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Are those any opposing? That motion carries 6-0. Madam Clerk?
Item number 7 is from Planning and Zoning, Ms. Tarika Peaks. For Mayor and Council to approve the final plat 2020124, the Strack Development. Ms. Peaks, I'm asking you to unmute yourself, please.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Tonight, I'm asking for your approval of the final plat for the Strack Development. The subject properties are located on the northeast side of Bohannon Road and will have on Howell Avenue, which is currently under construction. Staff has reviewed the final plat and it meet all the current regulations of the city's ordinance, and staff is recommending approval of this plat tonight.
Okay. Ms. Peaks.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you give council just an overview of this development?
The lots that Mr. Strack is subdividing, lots 2 through 6, he's actually subdividing those lots for future development along the new Howell Avenue road that's under construction at this time. A use permit came before council in October 12th of 2020. That was lot number 1, which was for the truck parking facility. And if you go to the second, third sheet. Okay. And you'll see what the subdivisions were made for lot 1, which was, like I just mentioned, the use permit for the truck parking facility that was approved by council on October 12, 2020. And then the other lots 2 through 6 will be for future development along the new Howell Avenue extension.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Peaks. Council members, do you have any question for Ms. Peaks concerning the approval of the final plat for Strack Development? Hearing none, is there a motion on the floor to approve?
So move, Councilwoman Davis.
Second.
Motion made by Councilwoman Davis and seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Heath.
Pro Tem Heath, yes.
Are those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposing? That motion carries 6-0.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Madam Clerk.
Madam Mayor, number 8, we have the Engineering Department, Mr. Lester Thompson. for Mayor and Council to approve the supplemental agreement number 3 to the PFA with GDOT for the I-85 at State Route 74 Sonoya Road Interchange Project.
Yes, ma'am. Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
Good evening.
On July 10th, 2020, the City of Fairburn requested $574,966.33 in additional PE funding from the Atlanta Regional Commission. This request was satisfied on October 19th, 2020. However, the new funding, when it showed up in the tip, it showed a 20% match coming from the City of Fairburn. If you recall, we were previously notified by GDOT that funding had been capped and that additional funding would need to be the responsibility of the project sponsor, which is the City of Fairburn. After much debate, GDOT finally agreed to match the state funds programmed in the TIP. The proposed supplemental agreement is GDOT's formal response to our request to cover the 20% match. So in order to be reimbursed the full $574,966 in PE funding, the supplemental agreement must be executed. As such, staff recommends that Mayor and Council approve the supplemental agreement number 3 to the project framework agreement with GDOT for the I-85 to State Route 74 Interchange Project for $574,966.00. Any questions?
Yes, Mayor. Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Councilwoman Portis-Jones.
Yes, Mr. Thompson, so that I understand, you said after much debate, GDOT agreed on, and I didn't understand what they agreed upon. Do we have to pay the 20% match or not?
They agreed to pay the 20% match, which estimates to about $114,933.26.
They will pay the match.
That's correct. Okay. We pay nothing.
Uh-huh. Okay, fantastic. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Any other council? Councilwoman Davis?
Yes, I have a comment. Yes. I looked at the documentation and background information on this, and I would just like to say thank you, Mr. Thompson, for your persistence with that 20%. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you very much.
And just so council knows, GDOT is not one to give up money quite frequently, but Lester was very persistent and it prevailed. So thank you again, Lester.
Thank you.
Council, you've heard the supplemental agreement number 3 to the PFA. GDOT, is there a motion on the floor to approve? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Councilwoman Portis-Jones, so moved.
Councilwoman Portis-Jones has made the motion. Is there a second?
Councilwoman Davis.
Councilwoman Davis has provided the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposing? That motion carries 6-0. Madam Clerk?
Item number 9, the Engineering Department, Mr. Lester Thompson, for Mayor and Council to approve an amended agreement with Trans System Corporation for the I-85 at State Route 74 Sonoya Road Interchange Project.
Yes, this is related to the previous agenda item for the amendment agreement with Trans Systems Corporation for $574,966.33 for additional PE services for the I-85 and State Route 74 Interchange Project. In response to various requests and changes spearheaded by GDOT, Transsystems submitted a request to the City of Fairburn for the requested PE funds. The budget impact, of, as previously stated, will be $574,966.33. It's 100% reimbursable. The purpose of the agreement is to update the database, environmental studies, the NEPA documentation, the preliminary bridge layout, and final construction plans. We've also included construction services in their scope in this agreement. The funding has already been captured in the supplemental agreement number 3 and has already been budgeted for this fiscal year.
As such, staff recommends Mayor and Council approve the agreement with Trans Systems for 574-966-33 for the I-95 and State Route 74 interchange project. Any questions?
Yes, Mayor. One question, Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Yes, Mr. Thompson. Yes, ma'am. So was because of the changes that were required by GDOT, is there anything that is impacted by this additional work that's required? Is there something that we will not be able to do because of this additional work?
No, this is just to capture and to pay for the work that's, pay for the additional work that's required. As far as, updating the database and environmental studies and the NEPA documentation and revising the bridge layout, updating right-of-way plans and things of that nature, just because the corridor has changed so much since the project initially started. So these requirements were necessary.
Okay. And can you give us some sense, because we're asked about this all the time, some sense of when this project would begin in earnest and the expected completion date? And in earnest, I mean in the sense that it will disrupt traffic or redirect traffic.
To be honest with you, we're really subject to GDOT. GDOT's doing a right-of-way acquisition on this project. Out of 54 parcels, they only have acquired 6 parcels.
Out of how many?
54.
Oh. We have a ways
to go. 13 are pending condemnation. The remaining are under negotiation, but some are on hold depending revisions to the right-of-way plans, which are going to be subject to this approval. So once we approve this, we can authorize Trans System to go forth and make revisions to the plan so they can go back and do additional right-of-way negotiations with some of the new property owners along the corridor.
Okay. Well, thank you for that information.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the plans can't be finalized until the right-of-way plans – until the right-of-way has been acquired. So once the right-of-way acquisition is complete, then we can finalize the plans and do the FFPR, and then put the project out to bid. And then once the project gets put out to bid and awarded, then there's a 2-year construction period.
Yes, but the right-of-way acquisition is the issue.
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Council members, do you have any other questions for Mr. Thompson concerning this amendment agreement? Is there a motion on the floor to approve?
So moved, Mayor Pro Tem Heath.
Motion made by Mayor Pro Tem Heath, and the second is by Councilwoman Davis.
Yes, thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposing? The motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The last agenda item, Madam Clerk.
Parks and Recreation, Mr. John Colbert, for Mayor and Council to discuss and approve the partial opening of Duncan Park for walking only.
Okay. Mr. Colbert.
Yes, Madam Mayor and Council. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
We would like to revisit the partial opening of Duncan Park. As you all know, it's been closed completely since the pandemic began back in March of 2020. We would like to open the walking path at Duncan Park for walkers only, walkers only. All the other remaining elements of Duncan Park will remain closed. In your packet, you have a sheet of all of those items and categories: basketball playgrounds, pools, football field, youth center. All of those things will remain closed. And what we will do, we will put signage around the park in order to encourage social distancing. I have signs that were ordered some time ago, about 9 signs, and I've talked with Mr. Harvey Stokes about installing them should this action tonight be approved. Are there any questions at this time?
Yes, Mayor. Councilwoman Portis Jones?
Yes, ma'am. Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Culbert, for bringing this forth. We've had some discussions about this for a while. Residents have been asking about when the park would be reopening. And I think this is a great start. My question to you, though, is could you tell us why you proposed the hours that you did from 8:30 to 4:30?
We proposed these hours. We will have staff available to monitor the park in the morning and close it in the evening, close the gates, because the gates have to be locked if we are to open it up. We also have to put the signage that's at the front of the park now back so that people who drive in to walk in the park will park only at the tennis court. So we want to do that during the day. At night, we don't want to be in the park trying to get people out of the park at night. So that's why we chose those hours.
All right. So this does not accommodate working individuals. And those are the ones that asked about the park opening, asked me about it. So they won't have access to it yet. Is there a compromise? Is there something we can do? I mean, it's walking only. So, it's opening and closing the gate, right? And did you say removing signs?
No, we will install signs indicating social distancing, as the CDC indicated that they would like for individuals to help with the pandemic.
Right. So on an ongoing basis, the only thing that has to be done is to open and close the gate.
Yes, and monitoring the park. We could leave those gates open, but if you leave the gates open, you're going to be faced with people driving their cars in at night.
I'm not proposing that, Mr. Culbert.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not proposing that.
Councilwoman Portis Jones, what are the proposed hours that you're thinking of?
Well, the park's usage was a lot during, before work. People started at 6 o'clock a.m. I'm not proposing that, but I think 7 a.m. would be a good option for opening the gate. We are now headed into spring. The evening hours are longer. Closing the park at 4:30 does not accommodate the residents who are working. And not everyone is working at home, so they will not be afforded the opportunity to use the park.
Okay, so you're proposing with daylight saving time coming forth, what March or April, that we open the park by 7 in the morning and close it by what time in the evening? 7?
7, yes.
7 to 7?
7 to 7, yes. Yes.
Okay. Let's hear from some other council members, because what we would have to do, we'll have to get staff who normally comes in at 8 o'clock to be there at 7 o'clock to open up, and we'll have to have staff that stays after 5 o'clock to close the gates. And it's just not something that we can put on the police because, you know, it's just not something that they do. And we're going to have to use them to help us monitor what's going on in the park. Because once we open those gates up, you are going to have people who want to go someplace else or who want to do more than walk in the park. So I think the first week or 2 or 3 weeks is going to be a testing for us if it is approved by council tonight. So with that being said, Ms. Portis Jones has recommended 7 to 7, and Are you looking at 7 days a week? I know we said Monday through Fridays. Are you looking at Saturdays and Sundays, Councilwoman Porter-Jones?
Yes, Mayor. I mean, it is recreational. I mean, it's outdoors. We don't have these restrictions on Avery Park, right? I mean, a person can go to Avery Park anytime they want. Is that not correct?
Yes, it's open. They can go out there anytime they want. But okay, I can tell you, people are not using that park whatsoever. Mostly the folks that use Avery Park were the folks from the manor. And they basically stayed in. And then when we had the children over at the youth center, they would go over for playtime in the park. But since they're no longer over in the youth center, we really don't have, I haven't seen anyone, Councilwoman Porter-Jones, in Avery Park in several months.
Duncan Park has a different clientele.
Yes, it does.
It does. And so, but we're only talking walking, and we're only talking walking around the park. When we discussed this back in December, we also said that we would put up the barriers so that you can't drive to the parking lot over by the football field, that you can't drive up to that area. And then I also thought that VFW was asking questions about access to the park. Where is that discussion, and what impact would that have?
Well, VFW have, Mr. Colbert, I'll take this. VFW have been asking for access to the park. But actually, what they have been asking us to do is to open up the VFW for events. And so that has not been approved by the city because, first of all, we're talking about social distances over there. They wanted to do some food drives over in the park. And when you open up the park, you know, we can't just tell people you have to go to the VFW and can't go anyplace else. And so that had been a hindrance. And so I discussed it with Mr. Colbert, that once we open up the park for walking, then the VFW is going to want that park open up for events over in their facility also. So that's something else that we have to think about. But with that being said, daylight savings time, I think, is March 14th. But I would like to hear from other council members as to your thoughts on opening the park, hours the park should be open, and the logistics of us doing it within the next, I'll say, couple of weeks to 30 days. Any council members?
Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem Heath, Mayor, when I was on the police department here in Fairburn for 12 years, we opened the park up, and we also closed the park up, and we would ride through the park and ensure that no one was there. And we would lock it up as well as open it up.
Okay.
And so like I say, I don't think that they would oppose doing that.
Okay. Is Chief Stoney Mathis on the line tonight? I don't think he is, but I'll have a conversation with him tomorrow. Okay. It just depends on how the vote goes tonight with this. So thank you, Mr. Heath, for
yes,
that suggestion.
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor?
Madam Mayor.
Okay.
Let me take Councilwoman Davis first, and then I'll take Councilman Whitmore.
I just want to ask this question in reference to restrooms. We don't have to be concerned with restrooms if we're just going to open it up for walking, right?
Okay. That's correct.
All right. That's it. That's all.
Yes. Councilman yes. Whitmore?
Yes, Madam Mayor. I guess my concern now is in reference to the VFW. Have we, in this case, recreation, have you had a conversation with the commander with them having a setup for social distancing and everything else that would comply with CDC rules, because I see the questions that's going to be coming out of this. Once you open it up just for walkers, the only establishment that we have over there at Duncan Park is the VFW. So we really need to bring that into the conversation as well, because if you're going to have a partial opening or 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week for people just to walk, we also need to have that discussion about how we can include the VFW as well.
Mayor, Councilman Portis Jones, may I respond to that?
Yes. And I think, and yes, give me just a second, Councilwoman. And I think you're making a great point, Mr. Whitmore, because, you know, if we open it up for walkers, I think it would be unfair for us not to open it up for the VFW. Now, but then you know, there's so many logistics to just opening the park, because, you know, we can't just open it up for walkers and then say someone is going to the VFW and we say we're just going to open it up for walkers. And we look around and they're over at the VFW. They've opened up the doors and they're in there. So what do we do at that point? So, you know, and it's just for discussion tonight, council, and, you know, I'm good with whatever your decision is. Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of talking equivalency, we're talking about being outside, walking around the lake. If that is what the VFW is willing to do, is to host their activities outside, because you know, because of the social distance requirement and all of the guidelines, then I don't see any problem with that. We are talking about being able to use the outdoors of Duncan Park.
And I understand what you're saying, Councilwoman Portis Jones. And again, my question is whether or not we have had conversation with the commander of the VFW. I mean, the same way we have other businesses that are practicing social distancing inside, as well as mask wearing inside, that can be accomplished at the VFW as well. I think the conversation needs to be had and see what the commander is thinking about. I think this is an opportunity for us to put everything on the table and not isolate with just one item.
Mayor?
Just yes, Mr. Colbert.
Yes, I have had some conversations with the commander, and the VFW wants to host their gatherings for the bingo for seniors, et cetera. And they indicated that they would participate in whatever protocol was set before them in terms of their people coming into the park. But what it would mean is that their vehicles will have to go up to the parking lot at VFW. But it's a conversation that would have to be discussed in a little more detail outside of what we have here on the agenda tonight, because we're just talking about a partial opening. But as Councilman Whitmore indicated, we would be exposing the issues around the VFW and their plans as well, because one of the things the VFW commander informed me was that they have a property that's located within our property and they don't have access to it. So that's an argument that they're making.
So question, how long will they accept us denying them access then? I mean, how long will they accept that? And can we continue to legally do that?
I can't answer that.
Well, based on my communication with the commander, I think the commander was trying to work with mayor and council, the city of Fairburn, as far as any contingencies that we put in place. Of course, we don't want the spread of COVID-19 in the city of Fairburn. And I thought it was admirable of them to even work along with them or with us in this endeavor. But now that we're opening up the conversation for walkers, it's really prudent of us to also have that conversation in reference to the VFW. That's my concern. If you do for one, we have to do for the other. So and that's why I'm bringing it to the forefront so we can have a full-fledged discussion and reference.
Well, Mayor, I ask then, may we bring this item back to the next meeting with that additional information for a vote?
Of course. I think that Councilwoman Curtis Jones, that's a great point. I think that we need to look at this just a little bit more and have some more conversations. And I would like to have a conversation with the commander at the VFW this week and bring it back on the agenda. But in the meantime, I think Mr. Barry is on the line, James Barry, who has been over there in the park for a long time. And I think he just texted me, and I think he wanted to make some kind of comment to us concerning that park. Mr. Barry, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor, Council.
Yes.
Good evening.
On the case of Duncan Park reopening, I think we missed a very intricate part of it by just saying that the VFW was the only facility or only place down there that it would actually affect. But being a part of the Fairburn Athletic Association, we are also a very intricate part of the park. And I'm just going to read you a little something here that I wrote. And from a recreational perspective, we have several athletic programs that depend on availability and the use of the park and its facilities. Football, track, and baseball are three of our main programs that depend on the park for training, as well as calling it our home. Now, not reopening will affect our foundation and momentum as an athletic association to grow, compete, and develop our young men and women. As an association already with small numbers, we cannot afford for our residents to take their children elsewhere, meaning neighboring parks, to compete against us. Many other athletes rely on the park to be a place where they can get extra training for their respective sport, mainly neighboring high schools like Creekside, Landmark, and Langston Hughes. You know, I think this is something that we really have to look at also. We just can't forget about, you know, the athletic department, the kids and stuff who really rely on that park and need that park. As we stated before, we had a conversation that we were going to do a gradual reopening. Nobody said anything about opening up the floodgates and just having it all shoot out where everybody just coming this and that. We were going to put it under close supervision with parks and recreation staff being a part of monitoring and making sure that guidelines and safety rules were being followed. Thanks to Ms. Porter Jones, that she said that the hours would change from 7 to 7. I don't see a problem with that because we can stagger staff to come in, close it at a certain time if we didn't want to use the police department or whatever. There are many other things that we can do rather than just say that we can't gradually reopen this park. You know, because what we talked about just using the tennis court parking area. That would sort of like be a staging area for people to park, and we could manage them better than having them go on and talk about they want to park up by the football fields and just walk around and this and that. We can better monitor this whole situation by doing that. So I think we need to revisit and rethink about not only what the VFW, but we need to think about our kids and our community and how this is going to affect them also. So I understand that, you know, the VFW is there, but the athletic program and our kids and parents also need a place to be also.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Barry.
Mayor?
Yes. So council, we have something else that we have to consider, and it's the athletic association and their input in the park. Councilman Whitmore.
Yes, Mayor. So I thank Mr. Berry for those comments. So then that just took it from one down three. Okay, so I think his comments was right on point, because that would have been the next phase as well. And I do have a question for Mr. Berry. Mr. Berry, as a member of Parks and Recs and having organized sports that you have been involved with for years, and you mentioned about our youth going to other programs and participating in that, can you enlighten us on what's happening in other parks with partial opening, so that even the athletes have the availability of working on their craft, whether it be football, baseball, or what have you?
Well, when you look at it, local parks like Union City, Welcome All, they're only doing walking right now. But then you go to Fayetteville and Douglasville and stuff like that. They actually held football programs last year where a lot of our kids went to participate. There was no major incidents that were reported, no outbreaks, this and that. The social and football, I mean, it's hard. It's not social distancing, but it's a matter of being safe and following the guidelines, you know, as you go. They limited the number of fans that they allowed in there. The practices were held. The practices were held where parents couldn't be on the field or be up around. They had to drop their kids off, keep at a safe distance, and come back and pick them up. All of these things can be done with guidelines and stuff put in place. And I think that here at Fairburn, at Duncan Park, that, you know, our park has been such an intricate part of the Metro Atlanta Youth Football Association that, you know, they understand that when you come into Fairburn, you have to abide by the rules, because that's one thing that we are sticklers for. We are sticklers for the rules, and those are the things that we do. So I don't really see a problem if we do it the right way, gradually open up, because these athletes, they need a place to go. They need something to do. And this is the off season when they start doing their light workouts, start building up towards the summer and all like that, before they head back to school, before the camps and stuff open up. We actually have pro athletes who want that, you know, because of our facilities and they've been here working out and stuff, that they want to come down and work out and train. And this is a big plus for us, because it's putting us on the map. They're notarized. It's making us being noticed in the public eye.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Berry.
Madam Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I think I noticed that the executive commander, I believe that's his position, Mr. Prentice, I think I saw his hand being raised as a representative of the VFW. Would it be permissible to have him speak, ma'am?
Council, do you have any objections to having the VFW speak to us this evening?
Not at all, Mayor.
Okay. Hearing none, Madam Clerk, I'm not sure who the person is.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
Hey, good afternoon, Mayor and Council. Hey, I'm Commander Baker. I took over as the commander of the VFW in June from George Fields. Most of you all know George Fields. Okay. And I've been listening in on the conversation. Me and Mr. Cubbert, we've been in conversation. And the one thing that we didn't want to do as a private entity inside of the park was to get ahead of the city. We wanted to adhere to all the CDC guidelines. Mr. Cubbert has been inside of our building, and I'm telling you, probably in the city of Fairburn, you won't find a building more socially distanced or meet the CDC guidelines. I was glad that y'all had the park closed, because a lot of my members has been putting pressure on me to get in, and I didn't want to get in until we was fully ready to operate. And I see ourselves in about 60 days, sometime in April, would be ready to get back inside of the park. I really appreciate Councilman Whitmore and Mr. Culbert their attention, but that one thing that I don't want to do, I deal with a lot of seniors that's over the age of 70, and I didn't want to be a major spreader of COVID. Most of my members now have been vaccinated, including myself. And so we are really ready in the next 30 to 45 days to start looking about going in there, reholding our meetings and doing some things. But I don't want to get ahead of this city, but I think the time is right for us to have this conversation to allow us. And at any time that anyone want to come through and look at the protocols for CDC guidelines and for the prevention of COVID and what we got in place, I encourage that we got masks for everyone. No one comes inside of that building without a mask. We got sprayers that we spray things down. We got socially distanced. So we got everything in place. And the year that we've been out of business have given us the opportunity to get back in business. But now that we're getting ready to talk about reopening the park, I think the conversation is now to start looking at a soft opening for the VFW as we move back into this process.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Thank you so much. Okay, council members, any other comments? Ms. Porter-Jones has recommended that, and I'll ask her to put a motion on the floor to table this until the March 8th meeting. But are there any other comments from council? And where's Mr. Culbert?
I'm here, Mayor.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Mr. Culbert, I think that we need to get back to the drawing board. We need to look at the times that Councilwoman Porter-Jones have suggested, which is 7 to 7. The opportunity for the police to open and close as they have done in the past. Another conversation with Mr. Baker, a conversation with Mr. Berry. I think there is a lot of logistics here.
Absolutely.
That we need to look at
before.
Now, if we're going to put this back on the agenda for March the 8th, that is only, 2 weeks away?
Yeah, more time.
Yeah, and it's not really enough time for us to do this. So I'm sorry, Councilwoman Porter-Jones?
Yes, so the original ask was for us to open the park to allow us to walk around the lake. The easiest, the less logistically required task of all the ones that we have talked about tonight. And I truly appreciate that we had a chance to have this input, to hear the perspectives of all the stakeholders in Duncan Park, which means that we need to have a phased opening. Right, because some of these things require more effort than others. And so what I am asking is that we open the park for walking only, as we had originally proposed, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. with Mr. Culbert doing his due diligence and work to bring back to Mayor and Council a phased approach for all of the other stakeholders.
Okay, you've heard Councilwoman Porter-Jones. What was not discussed was a target date. I'm sorry.
March 1st.
Was not, okay, so the target date that she's proposing is March 1st. Council members, is there any other discussion concerning this opening of the park for walkers only? I think this needs, if you vote on it tonight, it needs to be a test. And at any given time, if we see that this is not working, if it's before another council meeting, we will close the park.
Madam Mayor.
If there are issues out there in the park, before another council meeting, if council decides that this is what they want to do, and we'll bring it back to council at the next meeting. But it's just something that we don't really need to think about and how we're going to handle this. Mr. Colbert, are you prepared if the vote goes tonight to open the park on March 1st? We're talking about how many days? Today is the 22nd. So
that would be Madam Mayor, that would be a stretch. That will be a stretch because we have to get the signage up. And if Mr. Harvey's on the line, if he can get the signage up by March 1st in the ground around the park and the walking path, then exactly. It may be. But it's a stretch, I think.
Next Monday.
Okay, yeah. So that's next Monday, I believe.
March 1st is.
Yeah, so it's a week from today. I think it's a stretch, too. Mr. Colbert, to do it on March 1st. I think we need to kind of look at some other dates. I don't know who has a calendar before them, but I don't think that we can do it in a week's time.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
A question? Okay. So this item was on the agenda for tonight for us to approve opening the park.
It's discussed and approved. And it's on the agenda tonight for discussion and approval, but it doesn't really mean that we have to approve it tonight, Councilwoman Portis Jones. It's for discussion and approval and or approval. So it's just up to council what they want to do. I think that there are some logistics here that we're going to have to adhere to before we can do that. We need to put signs up. I don't know what Mr. Harvey's schedule is right now. I don't know if we have all of the poles to put the signs up. We have to get with, we have schedules to make. Those who are working in the park, in for Parks and Recreation, those schedules are going to have to be changed. Because they work right now from 8 to 5. We got to get with the police. Chief Mathis is not on the line right now. So we've got to get with him on tomorrow or the next day. So I think the time frame is a little pushing it for us right now.
May I make a suggestion? This is Councilman Pallant.
Yes, sir.
I'm thinking that realistically, and I don't have any reason any personal reason to say this other than I think it would require some conversation, some thoughts shared by our city attorney, along with the chief of our police and a number of department heads who are involved in this, before we bring this back for a vote so that we don't have any issues that create a problem for us, legal issues, particularly further down the road.
Thank you, Councilman Pallant, and I'm in agreement also. I just don't think we can open it up on March 1st. I think there needs to be some more conversation. And I would like to have a conversation with Randy, the police chief, Mr. Colbert, and I think Jessica is on the line. I'm going to ask her to schedule a meeting no later than Wednesday with these parties so that we can talk about this. I would like to see a motion on the floor to table this until a later meeting, until we work out these logistics and bring it back to council.
Mayor, just
make before the tabling,
Mayor, I do have another comment.
Okay.
And that comment is looking at the three entities that has spoken tonight, and again, even with a soft opening just for the walkers, and then noting the fact that Commander Baker was looking at a couple of months down the road, I think now it's imperative for the athletic director and Mr. Berry to come together and see what they can come up with and then present everything as a whole. So if you're going to have a phase, phase one could be the walkers. Phase two could be what programming Mr.
Berry.
James, Mr. Berry. but what Mr. Berry is proposing. And then on top of that, with the VFW coming in at the last part of that. And then I think if Mr. Colbreth has that opportunity between now and the next time we actually meet with a proposed schedule, knowing that he has all the material in place that he needs to go out and execute everything, and then start at that time. That also gives him an opportunity to look at the logistics for his staff with a delayed or early start and delayed departure and everything else. So I think is a great opportunity to cover everything in one shot.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Are there any other comments? I think Mr. Allen had put a motion on the floor to table to a later date. He did give, we don't have a date right now. Mr. Palin, was that your motion?
I'm making a motion that we table this until all these issues can be reasonably resolved, as well as an opinion offered on all of it by our city attorney.
Okay. Councilman Palin has made a motion. Is there a second to his motion?
Second, Councilwoman Portis Jones.
Councilwoman Portis Jones has seconded the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposing this motion? That motion carries 6-0. This item will be tabled until we meet with our city attorneys and other interested parties, and we'll come back to city council at that time.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, it's 9:30. Council comments. Councilman Smallwood.
I don't have anything.
Okay, Councilman Palin.
Oh my God, have I anything to say? Absolutely not, my dear lady.
Okay, Councilman Whitmore.
No comments, ma'am.
Councilwoman Hattie Portis Jones.
Well, no.
Is that a yes?
No comment.
No comment from Councilwoman Portis Jones. Councilwoman Linda Davis.
No comments.
Okay. And last but not least, Mayor Pro Tem Alex Heath.
Yes, Mayor, I got one thing to say, and I just wanted to say thank you, Lester Thompson, for your decisiveness with the GDOT, because to begin with, this procedure started out, they only wanted to do a merging diamond, and we got them up to where we're at. So I'm just delighted that it's not costing the city any more money, and I just want to thank you openly. Sometimes we forget to thank people that have really done a great job, and you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I have no comments tonight. We don't have an executive session. It is now 9:32. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Councilwoman Davis. Pro Tem.
Motion made by Councilwoman Davis and seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Heath. All those in favor? Any opposing? We now stand adjourned. You all have a wonderful and safe week.
You too, Mayor.
Thank you. You too.
You too, Mayor.
Night.
Thank you.